the issue of censorship, and specifically external censorship. And we saw the difficulties in trying to determine whether or not a text was actually censored. And the example that we used last week was the bracha, the blessing of Shlomo Sonnigai, and whether or not the opinion of the Gra that holds that you say Shasani Yisrael is a product of censorship, that is, he was using faulty text, or it was actually a legitimate position. So this week we're actually going to see the second part of this, is that although it's somewhat easier to actually figure out instances of censorship when it comes to the Gemara, when it comes to the Talmud, most editions today don't avail themselves to those tools, and therefore most times when you're looking at a Gemara, when you're looking at a passage in the Talmud, one can never be absolutely certain that they're not reading a censored text. Even though today there's no reason any longer for any of these texts to be censored, that is, I assume for most people that they live under a democratic government, and typically, at least in the United States, there's First Amendment rights that allow for particular types of expression, and therefore there is no reason today, at least any publications in the United States, that the Gemara should bear any remnant of the censorship of the church that was affected basically in the early 16th century. However, we're going to see two instances that absolutely is not the case, and in fact these two instances are merely indicative of the larger work that is the Talmud, and the fact that that most of the current editions still bear witness to the censorship. So we are using the same series of source sheets that we were using last week, and if you want to download those, you can go ahead and click the box that says File Share 2. And we're starting on page 9. We had done the first 8 pages last week, and now we're continuing on the second half, the second part of this source sheet. And what you're looking at on page 9 is a page of the Talmud, and this particular edition comes from Gimel Amud Aleph. That is 3a in Gemara Brachos, and this is the Basel edition. And what you see over here is at the first wide line, the passage in the Gemara reads, "V'omer," and God said, it says, actually let me back up, just one line, "V'akol mishmar, mishmar Yosef HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'shoag ha'ari," that on every single mishmar, this is talking about the various, the night is divided up into various time periods, and it says that on each of these time periods, God roars like a lion, and he says, "V'omer," where the bracket is on the first white line, "O lebanai, sheba avonoseham hechravti es besi, v'sarafti es hecholi, v'higleisam bein umos ha'olam." So every one of these time periods, God, as it was, roars like a lion and cries out, "How terrible it is to my children that because of them I burnt my house." So this is obviously a reference to the temple, to the Beis HaMikdash, and the fact that the Beis HaMikdash is destroyed. The odd thing about this particular passage is that it doesn't make sense that God would be screaming and saying how terrible it is for my children that my house, i.e. God's house, has been destroyed. It seems odd that God would, that the pain, in other words, that the detriment, O Lebanai, is on the children, not on God, because God's talking about his own house. And in fact, if you turn to the next page, you'll see this is a passage from the Dikduke Sofrim. And as we discussed last week, the Dikduke Sofrim is a work by Rav Nosson Natha Rabinowitz. And in it, what he has is texts of the standard Gemaras, and then that's in the right column on every page, and in the left column is the text from the manuscript. And then in the footnotes, he explains where he got certain things from. So, for example, we're looking at this particular passage, and we're looking at the hay, which is on the right side of the page. Well, not all the way on the right side, but sort of to the right there. You'll see that there's a hay in script. And this is the passage from the manuscript. And he notes that the passage from the manuscript is different than the passage that we just read. And it says, "O li, shehechrafti es beisi v'sarafti es hecholi v'higlesi es banai l'beinu masola." So this particular reading has not that the detriment or the O the woefulness is not on the children, instead it's on God. And that makes a lot of sense. Like God saying, how pained I am that I destroyed my own house. However, if you read the way the passage reads in the text that we just saw, it's how terrible it is for my children that I have destroyed my own house. So, unless he's... It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. But if you look at the footnote hey, he notes over here that this is Vakachi b'menorah sam'ar. This is the way that it also appears in the menorah sam'ar. V'hanusach o'le shechrati b'loli, who gam came b'tfus sansina b'venetzia, Krakow b'benedisti, b'harosh b'tfusim eilu v'yalkut yimiyal. So he first says that there's a side issue that we're not really, that isn't germane to our discussion about whether or not it has the extra word of b'li. But then if you see after the parenthetical, it says, v'seder of Amram gon tfus dafi gimel on days, u'b'tfus bazila shinu ha-sensor, and in the Basel edition, the edition that we were just looking at, the sensor altered it, u'mimenu b'tfusim ha-chronim. Then from this, all the later editions have this change. So that is that the original reads, God is complaining about himself that he was forced to destroy his own house, i.e. the temple. In the printed edition that we saw in Basel, and that's the work of the censor, that is, none of the manuscripts have that reading. All the other texts seem to indicate that they didn't have that reading. And that is that they don't have, oh, lebonai, how terrible it is for my children, shechrafti es beis. But if you look, so even though Rabinowitz notes over here in Dikduke Sofrim that this is an error, and this is only a change, shinu ha-sensor, mimenu b'tfusim ha-achronim, that it's a change from the sensor. If you turn to the next page, you'll see, and this is a page from a regular Vilna edition of the Shas, if you pull out a Gemara, you'll see that it still reads, it still has the corrupted text, and it says, V'omer o lebanai lebanim. So it's again a reference to my children, Shabbosena hechraftias beisi, v'sarachtias hecholi. So again, this is the incorrect reading that's a product merely of the sensor, and it has no basis in reality. Now, the censor for the Gemara in Basel edition, the Basel edition, I don't recall if there was a single censor. My recollection is that there wasn't a single censor. But be it as it may, the Basel edition was the first edition that was allowed to be published after the Talmud was banned and burned. That is, in 1553. At the end of 1553, there was a decree that went out, as we saw last week, that said that all the editions of the Talmud will be burnt and banned, and then other books were similarly subject to certain forms of censorship. And it wasn't for many years after that that the Talmud wasn't printed at all. The first edition of the Talmud that was printed after this ban was the Basel edition. And the Basel edition, in an effort to appease all the relevant ecclesiastical authorities, it's one of the most heavily censored editions as a way to avoid and to obtain licensing for printing of this Talmud, because otherwise the Talmud was under a ban. And in fact, in the Basel edition, famously, they didn't even bother including the sectas of Avodah Zarah. They just gave up, because they knew that there was no way that they would ever be able to correct that in a way that would get past the censor. However, there are numerous other instances in the Basel edition that there have been similar forms of censorship. And the reason that this is censored, just to be clear, is because if we read it like the original, it means that God feels bad that he destroyed the Jews' temple. Now, under Christian theology, the fact that the Jews' temples were destroyed isn't necessarily a bad thing. Moreover, any time that you have in the Gemara the fact that the Jews influence God, or God feels bad for the Jews, or that there's a special connection between God and the Jews, typically that's altered in some way. So here what you have is that God is bemoaning the fact, he's regretting the fact that he destroyed the temple. That's the way the original reads. The way that the censored version reads, how bad is it for the Jews that God's temple has been destroyed? Which fits with Christian theology generally. So that's why there was a single word that was changed. It's changed from oi li to o lebanim. But that has a rather significant effect. And as we've just seen, that the Vilna edition, the standard edition today, still bears witness to this form of censorship. So in other words, this has never been corrected in the standard editions. Now, if we turn to the next page, we have over here is also a Gemara from Brachos and also from the Basel edition. And again, this is from Samach Beis on Beis 62b. Now over here we have a similar example. A similar example of censorship. In this case, is more a global form of censorship. That is, it was a reference to Edom, and Edom is typically understood to be a reference to Rome, but so Rome was typically a reference to the Christian church. So over here, they went ahead and removed a reference to Rome. However, in doing so, it makes the Gemara unintelligible. And indeed, there is, just before we get into this, because it's actually it's a very good question, what was the purpose of the censor? Now, there's actually a recent book that was just translated into English with regard to the censor. So last week we had talked about a few books, all of them in English, about the printing of the Talmud, and perhaps it makes sense just to reference them one more time, and then also call your attention to another two books that I didn't mention last week. And that is, when it comes to censorship, there's a book that was printed at the beginning of the 20th century and then reprinted a whole bunch of times by William Poppers. It's called Censorship. It's called The Censorship of Hebrew Books. And it's a very, very good book on censorship. But more recently, there is another book that was just printed that's actually excellent, and it's a much more up-to-date version on censorship, and that's called Censorship, Editing, and the Text, Catholic Censorship in Hebrew Literature in the 16th Century by Amnon Raz Karkozinski. I think it's how I pronounce his name. Anyways, it's originally written in Hebrew, and I have the Hebrew version, which is published by Magnus Press, and looks like that. And recently, the University of Pennsylvania has published a translation of this particular book. And in this book, he discusses some of the rationale or some of the backstory behind the censorship. He actually argues that censorship was actually a positive thing in the sense that it allowed for books that otherwise wouldn't be allowed to be published at all to go ahead and be published, because now, so long as you removed a couple of offensive passages, all the rest was okay. So the censors absolutely were representing the church. However, they were also allowing Jews access to books, perhaps, that they otherwise wouldn't have had access to. And there is a discussion as to exactly how far one can take that particular thesis. But yes, in all these cases, these were, for the most part, they had to undergo non-Jewish censorship, or at least Jews that had converted. Those would typically be the ones that would be in charge of censorship. And then finally, I just want to call your attention to just one more book before we continue on, and that is that we're going to talk about the Vilna edition today, and how, as we just seen in the last case, and then in this case as well, the Vilna edition, which is the standard edition of the Gemara, is still has these forms of censorship. And an excellent history on the various editions of the Gemara, that is, the various printings of the Gemara, is something called Mavo L'Shas Vilna, which has a very, very colorful cover. And in it, it has essentially all the editions of the Talmud, and it'll have a title page from each of them, and it has some background material about that particular edition as well. It lists all the commentaries that are printed in the back, which is very nice if you want to find out about commentaries that appear in the back of your Gemaras. So it has that as well. And this goes through the history of getting up to Vilna, and then from Vilna, as we're going to see in a moment, that became the standard edition of the text. But now turning to this particular passage of the Gemara, and we're looking again at Samach Beis and Beis in Gemara and Brachos. And as I mentioned, what happened is that they removed the word Edom. So it reads as follows: Rabbi Elazar al the Beis Akisei. Rabbi Elazar went to the bathroom. Asa hahu parsai, a Persian came, dachuk, and he pushed Rabbi Elazar. Come Rabbi Elazar, v'nafak asa drukne shmitai le karshishe. So what happened is that apparently the Persian, as it reads in this text, took a bullet, as it was, for Rabbi Elazar. So he pushed him out of the way, and in doing so, he got caught by the arrow or whatever it was, and he took it for him. So Rabbi Elazar said about this, or he described this particular incident as this: the Eden Edom Tachtecha. that I will give you a person underneath him. Al Tikri Adam. Don't read a person. Ella Edom. A Roman. Now, in the context, this makes the pasuk that Rabbi Elazar quotes makes no sense, because remember that the passage began, Rabbi Elazar all the base like say asu how parsai, a Persian came up to him. So why would Rabbi Elazar use a pasuk that refers, that he uses an al tikri, don't read it one way, instead read it a different way, read it Edom, Roman, when the person that saved his life was a Persian? So of course, as one already probably figured out, this was a case again where the Gemara was altered. And if you look over here, again, you're looking at the bottom of the page of the Dukei Sofrim. So again, on the right side, you have the text of the Gemara as we have in our printed editions. And on the left side, you have the manuscript version. You see the last block letter line, it says, Asu Ahu Parsai. And then next to it says, Roma, a Roman, which of course then makes sense with the pasuk that he then quotes. And in fact, if you look at the footnote, one will see that Kachi b'chol ha'tfusim ha'shenim v'nishtana b'tfus b'zilam in a censor. Again, this is an example of every printed edition has it as Roma, as a Roman, which again fits with the pasuk, and it was only in the Basel edition that it was changed. So now, if we go to the Vilna edition, though, it still retains the censorship that has no basis. And that makes no sense. If you look again at the first wide line, where the arrow is, Hahu parsai, dachai kam Rabbi Elazar, v'napek asai darkni, shamali kari eli Rabbi Elazar, v'yetan adam tachticha al tikri adam ela edom. And again, he's quoting a pasuk about Rome, when in fact, at least according to this reading again, it's a Persian. So again we see that although we knew as early as, I think that the Zugai Sofrim was printed in the 1880s, we already knew in the 1880s that this was an incorrect reading, but if you open up a Gemara today, you'll see that this corrupted reading still appears there. Now, this is particularly shocking in light of the fact that it's obvious that the editors of the Vilna edition were well aware of Rabinowitz's work. Not only that, they used Rabinowitz and they used him to obtain a particular manuscript, as we'll see in a moment. And then additionally, they seem to say that they were very interested in ensuring that the text was correct, when in fact, as we have just seen in two examples, and there's of course many, many others, that they retain the text that's only a product of censorship. And what we're looking at over here is that although it's a little known fact that aside from the fact that we saw a couple weeks ago that the Yerushalmi, let's say, has a very, very nice introduction about the Yerushalmi generally, the last Masechta in Talmud Bavli after it, which is Masechtas Nida, appears from the printers and afterward where they discuss their printing process. So if you ever want to know where the Vilna edition got all this stuff and what it contains different than earlier editions, so on and so forth, there's actually a very nice afterward where they explain all this. And we're going to look at the second paragraph over here, and it says as follows, Ki hine lo lahatis shas kikol sifrei hashas banu. We didn't come to print an edition of the Talmud like all the other ones. Lo lahatiko b'tzuraso harishonim v'luchukas maisa hatfasos kemaisa kuf. We aren't coming to merely be the act of monkeys and merely copy from one to another. U'lahar elav or chadash. Instead, we are coming to ki levar v'lashvayim chadashim panu chadashim, because we're coming at it anew. U'lahar elav or chadash, to create a new light of the Talmud. Or harishon shenigzo imenu Meir Shana Madko, that's been hidden for the last 100 years until now. Kiher Hashem es Ruchenu l'chapish oros haginazim b'kisve yad rabaseinu harishonim. Because we've obtained manuscripts of various rishonim, mefarshei hashas, commentators of the Gemara, l'chapish mitzvunosehem, and to take them out from their hidden places, u'lechutza me'ofel machshavei genoschem, to remove them from their dark and from their hiding places. Hilti yichos od v'tamon, that they will no longer remain hidden. Litlos ha-sama'oro sa'ilu v'rkiya ha-shas l'horo l'ogitzuris ha-zach, ha-bar v'nishkamo'ot. That essentially what they're saying in very flowery language is that they've obtained a lot of manuscripts of various commentators. Uma bar ha-voda zos aleinu, uma Atzama, he says, how great this was. Kami Yagios Yagana Baterma Tsinuas Auras Analomaim, how hard it was for us to obtain certain one of these. Kama Amel Vitala Shiva Baterm Kitsun Dachim Bakama Kesa Buzeno Alino, how much money it cost us. Ki Haya Nafutsim Furazim begins the Asfaram Kol so Teva, they're all spread out, and they go on and on about how hard it was for them to get it. Now, one of the particular things that they did, one of the very, very important commentaries that they have, that doesn't appear, at least in as a complete version as it appears in the standard edition of the Vilna Shas, is that of the Rabbeinu Hanano, which is one of the most important early Rishonim. And if you look at the paragraph that begins, the Al Kol Eila Rabosa Hatola Asher Matzona Bederach Hazeh, Ki Mekusha Ki Mukshim Gedolim Pigashna Mekshalim Rabim the that's what that is. The Taktum Baderach. It says the Satan Lano Pamas Rabbas. How hard it was for us to do this. How many trials we had in doing this. Kama the Bereshis Malachton Nigder Haderach Badena Kishana Tvima. When we originally tried to obtain this, it took us a year to get anywhere. Badena Kishana Ad Asher Chashashnu Charamano Demalchus Baeda Biasher Bikina Sat Vrasazos. That it wasn't going to happen at all. Then after this we started it. We only had the Rabbeinu Hanano. We didn't get a copy of the Rabbeinu Hanano on Moed. They only had it from one Masechta that was from Masechta Shabbos and then from Seder Nezikim. And Novel Hatiglano as Pirusha Masechta Seder and Shar Masechtos. Miksavya Shabaron based Eked Asaram Shabbavadikin. So we wanted to get a copy of the Rabbeinu Hanano on the other Masechtos, and it was the only known manuscript is in Rome in the Vatican Library. And the library is closed to the public for 4.5 months. That he says that for the summer months of June and July, from June it's closed, and then in November it opens again. But for those 4 months, no one is allowed to go there. No one at all, it bars all visitors during this period of time. And this was a huge problem with regard to our printing and including the Rabbeinu Hanano. And we were very pained by this. So what was the problem? In reality, they could have waited. They could have printed the volumes of the Shas out of order. In other words, wait until they got access to the Vatican Library. And when they got access, then they can go ahead and copy Masechta here, Masechta there, and just print the ones that you get. But they decided prior to printing that they were going to do it, they were going to print it in a way in the actual Seder, which meant the initial of the Vihakta Mu'ukha Lamuktam. So obviously they couldn't print later ones before they printed earlier ones. The Ozos, Ki'afa Masechta Shapirish, Rabbeinu Hanano Kavar, Hayi Bidenu, Chaser Lanu Hosafas Acheres Asher Gadanu Lahen. The Lahaya Biyadina Menamuchan Rak Masechta Sanhedrin Levado. And in fact, even the ones they had, those weren't complete. So they really needed to get access to this particular manuscript that's in the Vatican Library. And in fact, they were forced to alter their printing plan. And after they printed Masechta Shabbos, they went ahead. And printed Masechta Sanhedrin out of order. Avo gam v'zos lo nashenero ki v'terem yiftach ashar ki v'terem yiftach ashar ha'otzar now v'terem yiftach ashar Masechta Sanhedrin v'yosem Masechta Masechta Moed t'star t'fasos ad liyam or liyam rabim. So the problem that they had was that even though they had finally that they decided to forego printing it in order, so they decided to go ahead and print one out of order. The problem was that the next one they wanted to print in order, and the library is closed. So how to go about doing this? And by the way, this was printed, the beginning was printed, Vilna Shas started printing in 1880 and was finished in 1885. And it says as follows, Av gambas oslun asharo ki v'term yitzvah asharo tzar na'o v'term yathik ha'ksav yalim sektus erbim v'yosim 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 sektus erbim Ta'atzer had Fatsos owed the Elohim Rabbin. So we would have to stop printing. In other words, the printing would have to be stopped while they waited for the manuscript. However, they were saved. Who were they saved by? Ulam, Kel Muzenu, Shalach Lefonenu Moshiach, God, our Savior, went ahead and sent us someone to help us out. Who is this? Es Hagon Rafal Nata Rabinowitz Shlita Miminkin, Baal Machaber Sefer Dikduki Sofrim. So the person that helped them out was Rabinowitz, the person that we saw who published Dikduke Sofrim, the Dikduke Sofrim that contains all the variant readings and that corrects all these errors that we just saw, two of which. So they're intimately familiar with him and his work because he's the guy that's going to get them this manuscript. Asher Hayaz Biromi, he was in Rome. The Asher Shama, the Bate Eked Hasparim, Sheberoma, the Sparo, the Duke Sofrim, the Sectusbo of Asra. So he's hanging out in the Vatican Library preparing the Duke Sofrim on Bob of Asra. And he's already in the Vatican Library. For Lu Haya Haschus, the Harushus Meis Sere Ha Vatican, Maasos Malacha Meis Eked Hasparim Hasherber Vatican, Ap Yimei Haeskaro. So he had the permission to go in even during the months that it was closed, even though the Vilna, the Aram press was locked out from the Vatican Library, they had it in. Who was their in? Their in was Rafal Nata Rabinowitz. He's hanging out in the Vatican Library, and he's going to go ahead and help them out with this. V'gam, he says, V'afi mei hachagim haktan, even on minor holidays, Rabinowitz was allowed in, V'gam achrei chatzos hayom. And even after noon, in other words, it seems that they were closed after noon. He's the only person that has this particular permission. Because they're generally very particular about this and they don't let anyone else show up. Rabinowitz is highly respected by the Vatican. He was very, his name had gone out before. He had letters from various academics. Basically that they try to get someone else in there with Rabinowitz, and the librarianship was very hesitant to go ahead and do this, and then he asked on multiple days, and then in the end of the day he was able to get it. So how are they able to get this important commentary of the Rabbeinu Hanano? They're able to get this important commentary because Rabinowitz is working on the Duke Sofrim in Rome in the Vatican Library. So they have all this information, and they have the information that Rabinowitz published, the other volumes that he published. And they all, and anyone that can look at it, just as we did, can see that, in fact, there are numerous examples, two of which we just seen, that they're a product merely of censorship, that they're a product of, that the change in the Gemara, A, doesn't make any sense, B, has no basis, and C, we know is wrong. But we've also just seen, they didn't go ahead and change it. In other words, the Vilna edition, the standard edition of the Shas today, even though they had the capability to go ahead and correct all these things, did not go ahead and correct all of these errors in the Shas. And they were well aware of who Rabinowitz was. So it can't be the fact that they were just unaware of this Dick Duque Sofrim thing. Instead, it was they were well aware of it, and rather than utilize it, it seems that they did not go ahead and use it. Now, one of the odd things is that rather than point out, as we've just seen, that if you open up a Gemara today, one has to be aware that there are actually instances of censorship. Other people take the absolute opposite position, and the position that they take is that although this is a product of censorship, that may actually be okay. And let's actually see what they say, because it's actually extremely difficult to articulate. And in fact, if someone else didn't say it, it's actually almost illogical, as we'll see in a moment. And what we're looking at over here is a page from a book. It's just easier because he collects all the stuff. And this is from Dr. Shmuel Spiegel's book, Amud Demetoldos Sefer Ivri, which is an excellent, he has two volumes out thus far. And it's an excellent book about history of the Hebrew book. And what he's talking about over here is he's going to quote a tshuva from Yekusiel Yehuda Greenwald. And the tshuva says as follows. But he says, and this is in the block quote here, Chashavti shemichuyavim anu toda lehasenser. I think, this is Greenwald talking, that in fact we are obligated to go ahead and give thanks to the censor. Why? That they have, you know, that their pen has passed over various statements that are attributed to the rabbis. Let's see if I have a clear version of that word. That the rabbis were in fact referring to a different religion that is not Judaism. Even though we can't be responsible for what's written thousands of years ago. He's saying that even though it's true that the Chazal may have said something, and today we may not like what they said about other religions, so the censor, as it was, did us a favor by removing those offensive passages from the Talmud. So therefore we don't have to now explain these passages that don't work with our modern day understanding of our non-Jewish neighbors. Then he says something absolutely amazing. That maybe another reason that this is a good thing, because if we would have the correct text in the Gemara, maybe we would misinterpret it. And we don't know what it's talking about. Sonim v'nevolim hishlisu hakavana. And what happened is, the people blow this out of, they take it out of context, or they don't understand the true meaning, and therefore it makes us look bad. And then he says, avo. There we go. Avo be'enenu yaflia madua amdu gedola Yisrael mineged kol dar v'dar v'lo asa be'atzma malacha zush asa hasensor. So now he says, so now that he's gotten us to the point that we have to thank the censor for the fact that the censor has made our Gemara as it was, though it's not quite, it's I guess similar to being politically correct. So if the censor was such a great guy, so why wasn't it that the censor went ahead and did this? Maybe we should have had the various Gedolim do this, because again, this is such a great thing that they've altered our text, as we've seen before in the two examples that we saw tonight, to a degree that they don't even make sense. How wonderful that is. Madura amdu Gedoli Yisrael minegda b'chol dar v'dar v'lo asu ba'atzma l'achazu she'asa ha'censor. Madura lo hishmitu heima esa mamorim shegarmu misitna v'sina al am Yisrael al lo diber. So why isn't that other evil didn't step up and go ahead and just remove excise passages from the Gemara? Halo Gedol Yisrael Savlu Ad L'mayla Rosh Mehavikuchim Hanorim B'chol Dar B'dar Be'inenu Roa Eich Nisrafu Sifrei Atama B'toch Ir B'pumya V'yashar Lashar Samat Fishim Asim B'zeh V'heim Choshru Ki Ma Shenitfas B'sfasenu O'v'sfas Aramis K'sefer Chosim Hu L'fnei Ha'olam Hachitzoni. So he says, maybe what it is the printers felt that we're on good ground over here, because we don't really have to worry, because again, it's printed in Hebrew or in Aramaic. Who else is going to understand it? So therefore, there's no need for us to go ahead and remove these passages. And they forget the fact that there are some non-Jews that can actually read these texts. And any printer that includes these passages, that is, the passages that actually appear in the Talmud, this is not some made-up passage. Instead, what he's saying, he's trying to justify the fact that printers would print the text, the correct text, and not sua sponte, and not on their own, go ahead and alter the text. So he says, maybe they did it solely so they can make more money. Umama o daba nafshenu berosonu ki machrizim gamaksha valam tsia kadasha ki yushlaim matfisim ki tzamorim im hakola shmato shishmito asensorim meshach meyashanos. And then he says, today we hear a horrible thing. What's the horrible thing that we hear? That there's a printer in Jerusalem that wants to print the Talmud with all the things that have been removed. How terrible this is. This is not tongue-in-cheek, by the way. This is actually what he's saying here. It's a rather surprising statement here. The Alzeh Onur Korim, Shikol Tviyosecha, Shikol Tviyosecha, B'nei So Lo Yashviyo Oneg Mehatova Hazos. The Jews won't do good with this particular favor. Lo Sefraseinu V'lo Chachmaseinu Yasiru Yisashru V'Hashmatos Halolu. We're not going to benefit at all from the re-inclusion and ensuring the correct text. Lo Bizmanenu V'lo B'Hadoro Sha'achreinu. Not today and not in later generations. Kevar Shivanu Tzoros V'Machreinu Lios B'fi Kol Machbo V'Vade V'Ashonu Epro Him Chachme Yishlaim Himinu Rom Kimizelo Toshia Yehuda V'Chitzor Yisrael Yashigu Chomer Yisukan Meich Kodash. So he says, he's arguing that the reason that this is a bad thing is, he's very pragmatic over here. He's saying that because these passages can be misinterpreted, and when they're misinterpreted, or when they're even interpreted in the correct fashion, and it turns out that they're anti-Gentile, so therefore our non-Jewish neighbors can view these very negatively, so therefore this is a horrible thing to include these things. Why upset them? So now we actually have this particular statement taken one step further even. And we have the statement from, this is a response from this letter that we just seen from Greenwald. This letter from Greenwald that actually says that we should be proud of the fact that our Gemaras have been censored because it allows us to interact with, again, it doesn't raise as many issues, which I guess on one level it's okay, but on the other level, I mean, today it clearly doesn't apply anymore, or at least would apply in less force. We now have the statement from Chaim Bloch in response to Greenwald's letter, and he says as follows: Kavanas Yididi Bezesh Yotze B'Mishpatecha Akasher Neged Hatlasa Shas Emashmatos Ladas Gidolim B'Dor Shelefneinu. With regard to your position that you're against this idea of printing the Gemara with all the things that have been removed, put back in. Lefnei Kamashanam Herali Yididi Rav Achosid Shol Chias Menahal Arkigo Shal Kila Vienna Shibonesu Ksadim V'Tzudos Kisvei Gonim Hanogeim Hashmatos Hashas. So Bloch lived, he eventually moved to America, but he lived for a time in Vienna, and he says that he hung out in the library in Vienna, and Shol Chias showed him a bunch of letters having to do with this topic that we're talking about, censorship in the Gemara. And there was one, apparently, Rabbi Lezer Horowitz Hodiyah V'Mikhtav L'Agonu Yehuda Sazal. And Rabbi Lezer Horowitz, according to this version that Bloch has, Shepamachas ba'eze matfis l'chassam sofer, that there was a printer that came to the chassam sofer once. It's a story, as most good Jewish things are. It's a story over here that one time that this printer came to the chassam sofer, Bikesh venu haskama l'hatfis shas imashmatas. And he wanted to get the chassam sofer to give an approbation that this printer would be allowed to print the Gemara and reinsert all the things that have been removed. Chassam Sofer Ana Benichusos. So, and the Chassam Sofer, according to this version, replied, Kevan de Ishmit Ishmit. Since it's been left out, we should leave it out. Umaisa Hashkachahu. It's actually divine intervention that this is left out. Lule Hayachefetz Hashem Be'eva Hashmatos. If not for the fact that God wanted us to have these things removed, they wouldn't have had the ability to remove these things. We're able to serve God without these particular passages that have been removed. And it would just be good if we can work with what we have. So just to break this out, according to this particular story, the Chasam Sofer is actually saying that God wanted us, God wanted Christian influences in the Talmud. Because again, Kevan de Ishmit Ishmit, since it's been left out, it's been left out. And Lulei Haya Chepetz Hashem Be'ilu Hashmatas, Ki Az Yidei Yad Zar Lo Haisa Shalatas Ba'us Hadvar. According to this particular iteration of this, that God wanted these things to be removed or changed, and if not, they wouldn't have been removed or changed. So again, these things, as we saw with the case of the fact that God is bemoaning his children rather than the correct version that he's bemoaning himself, is totally linked to a Christological interpretation and not a Jewish one. So if we follow through with what is just said here, it would appear that according to the story, the Chasam Sofer is actually arguing that God wants Christian interpretations in the Gemara, which of course makes absolutely no sense. Because why would the Jewish God also want to have Christian interpretations? It doesn't really work here. And moreover, if it's true that this is quote-unquote hashkacha, that is divine intervention or divine providence, that God would have these things removed, isn't it also divine providence that, for example, Nasanata Rabinowitz would write a book called Dikduke Sofim that would allow us to now see what the things we have that are missing? I mean, why isn't that also divine providence? Or these printers in Jerusalem that were going to go ahead and print the text with these hashmatos, or the printer that came to the Chasam Sofer for the aberration, why isn't that divine providence? Why in this particular story are we only willing to attribute divine providence to the censorship? So there's a whole bunch of issues with this, but be that as it may, this is just to demonstrate how far people go with why it is that we don't have the correct text even today. So we've seen before that till now we can sort of write it off as laziness. That is, the Vilna edition, even though they may have been aware of Rabinowitz and they used him for the Rabbeinu Hananel, maybe they didn't feel like altering all the texts. It would be very time consuming and probably extremely expensive to go ahead and do so. But now what we have is not just laziness or the fact that they wanted to keep the edition beforehand. We actually now have the assertion, at least according to Chaim Bloch's version of events, that it's actually a positive thing that texts are censored. Which doesn't really make, it's an extreme position, to say the least. But that's not the only extreme position. There's actually another, I guess, the other side of the spectrum. So we have one side of the spectrum, which is Chaim Bloch, and saying that censorship, that Christological elements in the Gemara are actually divine providence. So now what we have is, to the other extreme, that everything is going to be a product of censorship. That is, people see censorship everywhere. And this is on the bottom of the same page that we're looking at over here. And it comes over here in Ostan Beis. And this is from a sefer called Alvono Shel Torah. And specifically, the chapter called Selon Dehechel, or the cross in the synagogue. And it's written actually, ironically, because we've seen, as we've just seen, that he wasn't that careful when he was editing the Talmud, but the editor of the Ram Press wrote this book. And he is I guess today he'd be referred to as a conspiracy theory guy. In other words, he sees conspiracy theories everywhere, and over here he's talking about Elenum, the prayer of Elenum. And we're going to see how far he goes to prove or to assert that this is all a product of censorship. And this is an Ostan Beis. HaTzantzar Machak Ba'alinu HaShabeach Shehei Meshtachim Lahabo Varek. So he says that the word verik, and to nothingness, that the non-Jews bowed to things that are worthless, verik is the gematria of Yeshu or Jesus. So on the one hand, they censor the word Barik, because that may be a gematria of Jesus. On the other hand, the censor has inserted himself in a very subtle manner the other way, and that is under the words v'kisei kvodo, they changed to Moshe Bikaro. That if anyone is familiar with the Leno, you know that you say Moshe Bikaro. So Safana Sofra is asserting that the original text read Bikisei Kvodo. So why? Why did they change it to Moshe Yikaro? Because Yikaro al Yeshu, Shiva Gematria Olam, the Mispar Echad, that Yeshu, Jesus, equals Yikaro. So just like it equals Verik, it also equals Yikaro. So therefore they actually inserted Moshe Yikaro in Aleinu. We actually have a Gematria of Jesus in a positive format. So essentially what they've done, they snuck it in the back door and it's hidden and no one knows it. So what we have is he's asserting that when we're praying in Aleinu, we're actually praying, at least this one passage, Moshe Vikaro, is a reference to Jesus. Because it happens to share the same gematria. Now at the same time, he was willing to concede that the Hevel Rik is also a mention of Jesus, again the gematria, and that's negative. So, if anything, all this tells you is that gematria is really meaningless when it comes to Aleinu, because on the one hand, we're either saying that Jesus is worthless, or on the other hand, we're saying Jesus, we're praying to Moshe Vikaro, the seed of Jesus. So, the same word can be used in two opposing meanings. So, all that tells you, really, is that the gematria really isn't worth all that much here. But he obviously felt that it was worth a lot, and apparently we only caught one, for, you know, we only do it for Rick, but we haven't caught this other one, and that's what he's going to go ahead and he asserts. But now he's faced with a problem. And the problem that he's faced with is that when did this change take place? That is, when did they change it from Kisei Kvodo to Moshe Yikaro? When did they insert this Jesus reference? So we have to look at the earliest time that we have a reference to Moshe Bikaro. Well, the problem that he has is that the reference that we have to Moshe Bikaro is actually a very early book. The book that we have it is from the Sefer Echolos, which is a Kabbalistic work. It's one of the very, very earliest Kabbalistic works that we have. It has a whole bunch of things. One of the things it has is that you hop when you do Kadosh Kadosh. It has a whole bunch of other things, and it's a very early work. And as far as I know, no one has ever claimed that it's a work of Christians. But of course, the problem that he has, Safana Sofer, is someone showed him, by the way, this is a note in the back when he's trying to correct some of the things that he wrote there, and he writes, Lamad 50 Siman Lamad Aleph, which we've just seen. And he says, Hazif Hazan Nasa Bethnim Besefer Hecholos. So, rather than say that his theory that this was changed, that is, was changed from Kisei Kvodo to Moshe Bikaro as a secret reference to Jesus, to say that he's wrong because it's mentioned in the Sefer HaKolos, he says, no. You can trace back this censorship, this insidious form of censorship, all the way back to the Sefer HaKolos. V'achrav nimshach l'tumo hator barachayim. So even though we can point to the earliest source, that's not a big deal. That earliest source is also a product of censorship. So no matter how early you're going to show him, he's just going to assert that everything is a product of censorship. The word yokar is never referred to God. So he says we don't really find that we see Moshe Yikaro ever together, and it's really always Kisei Kvodo. Therefore, the only reason that we'd have Moshe Yikaro must be because some Christian stuck it in there to go ahead and and all these are things that we're doing as a reference to Jesus, Moshe Bikaro over here. So that would mean that the prayer that you say on like Rosh Hashanah actually has in it this case that we're actually referencing Jesus, all because of the gematria. Now, of course, it is possible that this is a reference to Jesus, but first of all, you have to demonstrate that A, Christians ever used gematrios to try to reference Jesus, one. Two, that the earliest versions of this text that we have, Moshe Bikaro, are also corrupted. right? Because if not, if that's actually the way the original appears without any alteration, so then obviously it's not a product of alteration. So the whole idea over here is that while it's possible, it's really not all that likely, and Safwan al-Sofer doesn't really have all that much evidence to point to it, other than the fact that it happens to equal that particular gematria. And as we've seen, Virik also equals that gematria. So while it's possible that both of those, it's sort of one the sensor did catch or one the sensor didn't catch, it's equally possible that neither of them really are referenced to Jesus because the gematria thing really wasn't used. In fact, gematria doesn't come up till significantly later. The use of gematria, especially in Tfilos, didn't become popular until the Rehut HaChassid and his students. So the idea that from the Sefer Hecholos, and even earlier than that, that they were going to head in using gematrios really isn't borne out by any of the evidence. So that goes for both the negative, the Hevel Varik, as well as the praise of Moshe Yikaro also probably isn't all that likely that it would, that it's actually a reference to Jesus or to anyone else for that matter. But we see from this case, from this particular instance, or for this particular example of Safwan al-Sofer, is how far people are willing to go to the other extreme. That they're willing that under every rock, they find, you know, remnants of the censor, that all these sorts of things we can explain away by arguing that these are merely products of the censor. Of course, this would, of course, be the opposite of the position that all these things are actually very, very positive and that we should go ahead and look at them, like we saw in the case of Chaim Bloch and his story with the Sam Sofer. So hopefully, what we've seen from all this is that both from last week's class as well as this week's class is that there can be no doubt that today, even though there's no real reason any longer that our texts would have any of these cases of censorship, in fact, they do. And in fact, as we saw last week, sometimes it's hard to sift what is actually a product of censorship or is not a product of censorship. And this week we've seen that we actually have when you open up a Gemara or the like, we can never be certain that we're actually looking at the uncorrupted text, even though there really is absolutely no reason for the text to be to contain that particular corruption any longer. So with that, I am wrapping up this class and the series in the whole, and I will take questions about this, or if anyone has any other questions about any previous classes, or I'm willing to answer those as well. Additionally, if you want, you don't want to ask now, I'm more than happy to take email questions, and the email is Dan Rabinowitz, all one word, at gmail.com, so you can feel free to go ahead and email me if you have any questions that you don't think of tonight or if you have from prior weeks. But if not, I will happily take questions for the next couple of minutes, and if anyone has anyone, please feel free. So someone asked if I could briefly talk about the book Beis Eked Svarim. Beis Eked Svarim is a work that's a bibliography of Hebrew books. And what Beis Eked has, as most bibliographies, and I'll distinguish it from other bibliographies in a moment, it'll have the title, it'll have the author, it'll have the amount of pages, when it was printed, where it was printed, and so on and so forth. Now, Beis Eked, for 40 or 50 years, was actually the standard work of Jewish bibliography. Prior to that was Otzer HaSvarim from Ben Yaakov, and prior to that there were a couple other works, which I'll talk about in just one moment. But more recently, there's actually been a new bibliography of the Hebrew book that's significantly better than Beis Eked. The problem with Beis Eked, as well as with other bibliographies, was that they included books that they didn't necessarily see, themselves, and they didn't know that they existed. Instead, they were relying on hearsay. And at times, they got things wrong. And the latest version, which is Vinograd's Otsa Sefer Ivri, a thesaurus of a Hebrew book, is significantly improved. It's very similar to Beis Eked in that it's just the bare bones information. Again, the author, title, pages, where it's printed, and so on. There is, however, a terrific database that actually has bibliography information, and not just the ones that I just mentioned, that is the title, you know, the amount of pages, when it was printed, how many pages, etc. Instead, it also includes interesting information like who gave the haskamas to the sefer. And it also will sometimes list articles on the book in question. And that collection, or it's either a database, I think you can subscribe to, or you can buy the CD. It's called the Bibliography of the Hebrew Book, and it's excellent. And that, because it's also searchable, it makes it very easy to find all the books that one is looking for. So essentially, Beis Eked was for a while a standard reference book, and now it's sort of been supplanted to a degree by Vinograd's work. And I mentioned prior to that there were other bibliographies as well. We spoke about the other weeks about the Chidah's Shem Agdolim. Prior to the Chidah, it was Shapsi Das, the author of the Sistei Chachamim, also did a bibliography, and there are other bibliographies by both Jews and non-Jews, but those are the most well-known or the most important ones, at least for right now. And Vinograd, I want to say it's called Otzer Sefer Ivri, the Thesaurus of the Hebrew Book is the title of the thing, and it's printed in two volumes. One volume is a list of just books, and it tells you where they're printed, and then the bibliography is actually done by city. I don't recall when it was published. It was probably published in the early 2000s, and it was published in Israel, in Jerusalem. And as I said, it's called the Thesaurus of the Hebrew Book. As to whether or not I'll be giving a next series, that is probably up to Torah in Motion. I hope to be able to continue these sorts of lectures, what the next series will be, I am not certain at this time if there will be one.